Hello, I'm Geneva. Welcome to Sebeni Ni Tama podcast, where we focus on all things wellness and soul healing. We touch on self-discovery and also literature, art, culture, activism, traveling as tools to elevate our mind. We promote self-love. I will be sitting with inspiring guests from all around the world to discuss their personal and powerful journey. I believe our presentation matters. It is only by relating to someone's story that you can ponder about the tools necessary for you to make manifest the best of yourself. This conversation can easily be a representation of you. Thank you for joining us. In this episode, I discuss with Asta, who is a freelance creative, about her past identity struggles being a Muslim in Europe, followed by a journey to self-acceptance, a passion in bringing in others' vague confidence and pushing them to deepen their goals, and of course, self-care. Hello, Asta. Thank you very much for being here. Tell me, where are you currently living?
Hi, Geneva. I currently live in Geneva.
All right. And where have you lived?
Oh, God. Okay, if we go through quickly without explaining why, how, and what. I've lived in Germany, France, Italy, Saudi Arabia, Chad, Australia, China, and Switzerland.
Wow, that is amazing. And where is home to you?
That's a good question, because my heart kind of goes between Geneva and obviously Chad, N'Djamena, to be precise. And I guess, you know, I would go and ask you back, what do you mean by home?
Where is the place you feel you always go back to? Where is your heart, we could say?
You know, it's quite interesting, because in the years where I was living away from home, and I put home into brackets, I realized that home for me was where my parents were. You know, so at the moment, I'd say, you know, home is Chad, because I miss my family, like the big African family. I miss my cousins. I miss the atmosphere. I miss the culture. I miss feeling like I belong somewhere. But at the same time, Geneva is as much as home as Chad is, because I have my friends here, what you could call childhood friends, because I've spent more than half of my life in Switzerland. And I have, you know, all my habits and places, and I know the country fairly well enough to call it home. So I'd say at the moment, actually, no, it's 50-50.
So you have been brought up infusing yourself with different cultures. Tell me about that experience.
It was... It's quite tricky, because on the one hand, I had really this opportunity of traveling really, really young and, you know, being brought up in different cultures. It really, as you said, infuses you. So on the one hand, you're not really aware of what's happening. You're just taking it in, especially when you're so young that you don't really perceive the difference between the outside world and yourself. But on the other hand, I have, you know, I consider it to be a chance to have parents with such strong foundations. And they always, always manage to kind of express to my brother and I where we came from. So even though we were exposed to other cultures and we were taking them in as a natural way of being inside of society and to be integrated in them, we never forgot where we came from. And it was always something of a blended culture that we tried to have at home. So we always speak Fula, our dialect at home, our language actually, at home, and have, you know, our own culture, if you can call it more or less, at home and outside. But we would also eat pasta or, you know, watch TV in French or whatever. So it was never, you know, outside you were one type of people and inside we were another type of people. It was somehow, you know, always a blend.
Wow. In regards to that experience, has it been challenging in some ways or in some countries?
I think we traveled a lot when I was quite young, and we came to Switzerland when I was about 14, 15. And coming here, I actually they didn't let my father kind of finish the school year for us before we moved to Switzerland. And that's important because I was feeling so good. We were living in Chad at that time. I was feeling so good. I helped my whole clique, and we had our jokes. And mind you, I'd only been living in Chad for 3 years at that point after coming back to Saudi Arabia. I was feeling so good and so integrated, and I had my whole family and the whole shebang. I was feeling really good, and I had to cut mid-year school to come to Switzerland and to get kind of pushed inside of a school system that was not the same as mine, and getting inside of a class that was already set up. You had already the different bands and cliques and whatever, and I had somehow to find a way to fit myself into. And so you're 14, 15. It's already not easy being a human life. You don't wanna kind of you're how can I say, you're already going through this existential crisis, wondering what am I, who am I, where I'm going to. And you come into this, I don't want to say culture because it's redundant, but also it portrays the wrong image of what I'm trying to say. But you come into this environment, let's call it, where you're under the feeling that you're being attacked all the time. And what I mean being attacked is that up till there, I always lived either in countries where Islam was the major main religion, or that it was just 50-50 in Chad, for example, or just no one really gave a damn if you were this or that. But I came at this time, I think, really in Europe, where there was so many, and I think it's still the case right now, where a lot of people are questioning the purpose or the, how can I say, the relevance somehow of Islam in a democratic country. And I think the challenge for me at the time, being a teenager, although my family's practices, we have a tradition of being Muslims, let's say it that way, for me it just didn't cut it. I was kind of feeling schizophrenic in a sense, because at home it would be like, yeah, of course, we're all equals, and my parents are really, really tolerant of anything and everything. But to have this, and going outside and hearing people tell you, no, this religion is wrong, it just promotes violence and this, and you're in the middle of that saying, oh my God, actually, am I that person? Am I just just a result of years and years of violence? And how come I've never seen it growing up? How come it's the first time I'm kind of discovering that those things happen, and Islam had the name of it,
Understand. So basically, you're Muslim, and Islam is part of your identity, it's part of your culture, it's part of who you are. It just came in this environment where you had to constantly deal with attacks to your identity. So tell me, how did you manage to turn out just right? How did you deal with those challenges?
So I think about a year or 2 years after this first life crisis I had, I really went inside of myself and had a big introspection where I was, there is this great quote that says, if you don't know where you're going, look where you're from. And that's exactly what I did. I reflected upon where I came from, what kind of values were transmitted to me. And I think that was the key for me, to see that the values that were instilled in me, that I developed throughout the years, that I linked to my religion, but also to my development as a person, were the keys to say, okay, if there is this value of humility, of kindness, of helping each other, of fairness, it cannot be something bad, So I kind of hang on to the values, and I think those are the keys that kind of can take you out of any situation. Just to go back and ask yourself, why? Why am I doing this? Why am I following this? And that's how I got out.
All right. And do you sometimes still have those doubts or ask yourself those questions, because let's be honest, we are living in a day and age where being a Muslim is not easy every day.
To be honest with you, I'd say 100% no, only because I realized that I didn't need to do any justifying. There will always be people who will always see the negative in something they don't understand or that they choose to read in their light. The most I can do is be the best version of Muslim that I can and that I define for myself, which is being kind to another person, which is to live and to lead by example. You know, instead of words, if people see the way I behave and they see like, okay, Asta defines herself as a Muslim, so she is a Muslim. So the way she behaves can be taken as the one of a Muslim. So she's kind. She's not putting bombs under people's cars. She's not doing all those terrible things that are depicted in the news. So maybe Muslims are not so terrible, you know. I don't want to be seen as an advocate or a strong head activist. I want to be seen as another person that just makes you feel like, actually not all Muslims are terrible. So actually just very few Muslims or people who identify themselves as Muslim do these kind of acts and terrors and put a bad name to a whole group.
Yeah. And did at some point in your teenager you thought about distancing yourself from this part of your identity because of this environment?
Yeah, of course, you had this idea. As I was saying, you know, when you're a teenager, you refute a lot of things, and especially if the environment helps you to be like, okay, it would be so much easier not to be Muslim than to be it, you tend to have those thoughts. But on the other hand, it was such a part, it was not even, some might say, oh, maybe you were afraid that your family wouldn't understand. I honestly was more thinking of a world where I would not be a Muslim, and I could just not imagine it, because everything I would try to describe myself as, leaving the religion alone, actually came back to the values that I've learned through Islam. So at the end of the day, it really didn't make sense to me to distance myself from something where I learned a lot of good values from.
Yeah, I get it. And tell me, what would be your advice to someone often deal with aggressions to their identity, and it does not even have to be in regards to being Muslim, but identity in general. For example, when I was growing up, I had in France, so I'm originally from Mali, and I left my country as a child. And one of my aunties in France, she was constantly underlining the fact that I was doing an African thing. Like, for instance, I would say that, oh my gosh, today it's so hot. And she would answer, well, I am African and I like hot weather, see? Or when I would try to cut vegetable a certain way, she would say something like, I'm going to do it the African way. And it wasn't necessarily the external environment, but it was even in my house where I felt like I felt some type of aggression to my identity. So what would be your advice to someone who had to deal with those type of aggressions?
It's a good point that you said. It really doesn't matter if you feel aggressed in your religion, in your sexuality, in your daily life, in defining yourself. What really matters for me is that you feel grounded, and that you feel that the way you are living aligns with who you are. And as soon as that happens, everything else that is not coming from the inside out just stops, you know, it just doesn't matter anymore, because it's not yours. You start to realize that 99% of the time people talk, they're talking from themselves. They're not even talking to you. You know, they feel insecure about the way that the environment is changing towards them. For example, if I take the example of your aunt, I would have felt really horrible a few years ago, you know, my teenage years, and being like, oh my God, I am African enough, what am I doing? But now I do understand that maybe one of the things she's projecting is her own fears of actually not knowing what home is anymore, her own fears of projecting, like, I have to really redefine myself as an African, doing everything in the African way, because otherwise I will be eaten. But no one can take anything from you if you don't just let them do it. No one can take my blackness in the bracket from me. No one can take the fact that I'm a woman from me. No one can take my religion out of me if I don't give them the power. So I think the first step to anything, I believe, is to finding out what are the values that are crucial to your life and then living according to them. And then the outside noise just becomes irrelevant. It doesn't mean that you don't listen to what people are saying. It just means that you know who you are enough to just take what is relevant to you and just let the outside noise be outside noise.
Yeah, wow. It was actually powerful. Thank you for those words. Yeah, it was. It's true that often people not even talking to you, they're talking to themselves when they are being some kind of aggressive. So what could we concretely do to reassert ourselves, to get to know a bit more what is important to us, our values, to become more confident in ourselves?
Concretely, you know, I've been doing this for 2 years now, and it's proven the most difficult and most uncomfortable experience yet, but it's the one that has taught me the most. It's to allow yourself every single day, or at least every 2 days in the beginning, to 30 minutes of silence, like absolute silence, just you and your thoughts.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of us don't realize how much noise is always surrounding us, you know. And noise is not only about the TV on. It can be having your phone, checking Instagram. It can be reading articles. It can be reading a book, thinking that you're actually doing something good when you're actually running from your thoughts. And I think if we allowed ourselves to take those 30 minutes, and to be like, okay, what is this crazy train trying to tell me? Why am I feeling always anxious and trying to put YouTube or taking a book or doing this and that to, just to be busy, not to listen to myself? What am I afraid of? And our fears, I believe that our fears are a great, great way to actually understand what is important to us and what we perceive as aggression to what is important to us, so what our values are.
Wow.
So I feel like, for example, if you take 30 minutes before taking those 30 minutes, let's imagine that during a day you're running around, you wake up, you're getting ready for work and, you know, going to brush your teeth, you put something on like a podcast and you're like, okay, I'll do two things at the same time. You come back to your room, getting ready, putting on your makeup, you're like, okay, let's put this video from this YouTuber I like. And you do it without really realizing what you're doing, but inside of yourself or somewhere in the back of your mind, it's like, okay, put something, be distracted. And then you come onto the train, you put your earphones, put some music, and the whole day is just so busy with noise. And outside, like, I cannot believe how noisy the city is, you know?
Yeah.
And actually, you come back at night and you're like, okay, what is all this? I always felt tense, and it's not only the tension in my head, the noise in my head, but it's also outside. Why is it like this? Why do I feel so pressured? And then some days, without even knowing it, you just find yourself in a state of silence, and you start to hear those voices. Oh my god, what if I'm not good enough? What if I don't find a job? Why do I feel like this job is not for me? Why do I feel like no one likes me? Why this? And then you start to be kinder to yourself, being like, you know, actually, you're perfectly fine. Now is where you're supposed to be. And then you start to understand that actually I need security. I need to feel secure in my life. Here you go. First value, security. So I feel aggressed and I feel insecure when this happens. You have your cases to work on. And then like this can happen, like different other, you know, values and different other realizations that can happen throughout the days. But that's the system kind of I've been trying to implement in my life because before that I tried, I think, everything that was under the sun in terms of self-help and personal development and putting processes and to-do lists and this and that. I'm not saying it doesn't work. I said that for me, the first way to go inside out was really to first understand what my inside was made of. And to understand it, I had to allow myself for some silence and for some much, much needed self-reflection and self-acceptance.
It's true that in our daily lives, we are always running, we are always meeting with people, we always have noise around. It feels like we're kind of running from our true self in type of way. I mean, what would be a good way to do that? I mean, sit in nature, away from your computer, away from your smartphone, just you and maybe a pen or a notepad, just away from everything.
It's funny because, you know, at some point I was really interested in meditation and yoga and everything, but I got kicked out of yoga classes 3 times, so I think it's really not for me.
What did you do?
Every single time I would just burst out laughing because it'd be those new age people who were really trying to get a really powerful message across, but because I just cannot focus on the message and I'm just like, oh my god, everyone looks so new agey and there is incense, and then someone would do something funny, I would just burst out laughing and piss off the I mean, you know, upset the teacher. I had to leave the class.
Excellent.
That happened like 3 times, and I just decided that was not for me. And meditation is really, really cool. There is this application called Headspace. Not sponsored, but I started to do this application, and it was really, really fun. At the beginning, I couldn't even focus, I think, for the two first minutes where they tell you to breathe and different kind of things, because I don't like structure. You know, and that's what I realized for myself, is just I don't like structured time.
Yeah.
So what I did, it happened quite funnily. I just have those. I'm really big on self-care and skincare. So every single night I do my whole routine of skincare, and it would end with a sheet mask or with any kind of mask. And with a mask, you have to stay still for 20 to 25 minutes, so the skin absorbs everything you're putting on, and you know, it's your me time, blah blah blah. So one night, completely, you know, I didn't do it on purpose, I just put the mask and I forgot to put the timer. And it's a kind of mask where you have to close in your eyes and your mouth, so you really cannot see anything, and you cannot shout at someone to bring you your phone or put a program for you. So I had to sit there, and guess how long my mask had to stay on to be dry. And doing that, I actually, at first I was so uncomfortable. I was like, oh my god, maybe I need to take off this mask. It doesn't matter. It hasn't set yet, so I can redo it. And I was panicked. And then the more I was just letting this whole thing go through me, the more I realized that actually I could do it. I could meditate this way. Just being in my bed with a mask on my face and nothing else, actually. It didn't require me to go to nature. It didn't require to put incense. It didn't require any gimmick. And I think that's quite powerful, because in a day and age where a lot of people try to sell us well-being and self-care, it's important to remember that actually anyone, and literally anyone, can do it. It doesn't require you to have anything but yourself and the willingness to listen to yourself, and that's it.
Yeah, well, that's quite powerful. It's true that in terms of well-being, we should definitely try and start where we are, with what we have. We don't need to pay anything. We don't need to try every other trendy activities. We can just start where we are. That's basically what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Start where you are, and then everything else, you'll be so grateful for everything else later, because it will be just an added bonus. You know, if you can meditate in nature, it's amazing. You feel connected. You really feel, you know, where we came from. You feel one with the nature. It's wonderful. If you can just put a bit of incense to make it even more comfortable and nice smelling, it's an added bonus. But to start with, it's, you know, start where you are.
You know, I've always admired your sense of self-confidence, really. I mean, some people were born with a natural sense of confidence, but for most of us, it's kind of a journey. And I really see you as a confident and peaceful woman, Asta. I mean, every time I have doubts about whatever, you infuse your confidence and your peaceful attitude in me, and I really, really love it. Tell me more about that. How does that come from for you, and what do you do to maybe exercise that confident muscle, if you could say, and that peaceful muscle?
Well, first of all, thank you so much. I'm laughing like it's Christmas morning over here, being like, oh my God, I'm really, really hot. And it's such nice feedback to have because I guess I don't really see myself that way. But one thing I do consciously and consistently is that whenever I enter an interaction, and obviously, it has to be with people who are inspired, who I see, and this is what I see in you, someone who is inspired, who goes after their dream, who don't just stand there and dreaming, they're really going at it, and that also changes the whole balance of a conversation and interaction. And what I want every single one, and I think that's kind of my vision and mission, if I'm selling myself as a company, is to empower people. And I think a lot of what can be perceived as my confidence or as peacefulness is just because I try as best as I can to really get across this message of you can do it, you can be whoever you are and you're the best. And that's what I want people to get out of kind of an interaction with me, not me selling them some kind of dream, but just reaffirming them. Because I found that it's so hard sometimes to just get a nice, kind word, in this world. And
Definitely.
it's so easy actually to just give someone encouragement. And there are not enough dreamers in this world. There are not enough people who are going after what they want. And whenever I meet someone like this, I feel inspired. I feel not even inspired, but I feel like I have to tell them, please, please keep on going. For you, the single person who is doing really what they want to do, there are millions who gave up. There are millions of people who are not going to do what they want to do just because they don't feel enough, because they don't have enough support, because they feel like if they talked about it, people will make fun of it. No one would understand that they're taking too big of a risk. I mean, nonsense, and that's what I feel is so important, and that's what I try to do with people. Just tell them, listen, if you want to go to the Kilimanjaro, I will be on Skype. I don't know if you have reception, but I will be there waiting for you, rooting for you till the end of the day, and that's what I want to do till the end of my days. Because I mean, there is space for everyone in this world. There is just enough for everybody, so we don't need to fight. We just need to support each other, and then we'll go even further.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing what you just said. But tell me, if you had to, what would you recommend to someone who doubts in their dreams, who doubts in their capacity? What would you concretely recommend for that type of person?
I just finished reading this book named Start With Why by Simon Sinek. And I don't believe in coincidences. I think everything comes into your life at a given time. And I'm talking about this book because it resonated with me so well, in the sense that it just confirmed what I knew inside of myself, which is start with why. If you have an idea, if you have a dream, start with the why of the dream. Don't really think, how am I gonna do it? What is the result of it? But start with the why. Why is it making you feel so excited? Why do you feel that the world or yourself need to be putting this idea out outside? And when the why becomes clear, it shouts in your ear. It becomes like this reason that you cannot just do anything else. And if you can't do anything else that follow this dream, then you're gonna go out and get some people to help you. And I think the second thing, after realizing your why, even if you're doubting, even if it feels like you don't have the right resources at the time, that you maybe it's not the right time, maybe you don't know enough, it's actually to get out and do it. Just do it. You just as simple, just get out. Dreaming. If you're dreaming of traveling the world, you know, go online. I mean, internet, it's such a wonderful tool for that, because online you can find communities of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So go online and check how people did, how did people travel the world, how did they finance it. You can find different crowdfunding websites that can give you ideas. You can talk to your friends. You can just go get on a blah blah car and drive to the next destination. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know why you're doing it, it becomes fuzzy, because you feel like it's not, you know, when you don't really know why you're doing something, it's a bit uncomfortable. You don't feel legitimate enough. You don't feel like it's enough, that you don't deserve it. But actually, we always deserve anything that we want. But mm-hmm. to have the guts to do it, you have to be clear. You're like, okay, I'm doing it because there is no other option. That's mm-hmm. who I am. That's how I want to impact my world or my own life. And there's just no choice. And it's fine, you know. Honestly, as long as you're not out there killing people, everything is fine, and will work out your way. And I think the final step is to stop doubting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And to stop doubting yourself sometimes does mean to take a step back and to distance yourself from sources of negativity. Mm-hmm. And this year, just to end it on that, but this year it's been quite a tough year, in the sense that I've had to say goodbye to friendships, or what I thought mm-hmm. were friendships, just because I realized that these people were actually more toxic than friends to me. I would really try to kind of include them in my plans and be like, okay, this is my dream and this is what I want to do. And every single time I noticed that they had something negative to say, not constructive criticism, but really negative,
mm-hmm.
because they would be projecting their own fears onto me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm not strong enough at this time to have someone negative in my life and at the same time keep them at a distance while enjoying their positive side, you know. So
to summarize it, we could say that the first step would be to truly and genuinely understand why and redeepen your vision and your mission, and to be confident in it. The second step would be just to do it, just to make a move forward to your vision and to your dream, just to do something that would mm-hmm. enable your dreams to become reality. And the last part will be to take care of your environment, basically mm-hmm. to take care of the people you keep around, to take care of the things you keep around, to take care of yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah? You know, there is this quote that says, you are the sum of the five people you hang out the most with, or something like this. And I really believe that to be true, because if you only hang out around people who bring you down, you're going to bring yourself down, you know, and then further mm-hmm. take this energy. So it's not worth it. It doesn't mean that you need to cut off every single person in your life, but you can start by seeing them less and less and interacting mm-hmm. with them less and less.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first part, I really think that introspection is finding out your why is not just a one-time job.
Yeah.
But the values that you can learn from doing this introspection are kind of universal, and you know, they cross time. So even if you have a life crisis, identity crisis, you can come back to them and feel somehow reassured that, you know, you are the same person deep down, but you mm-hmm. can always change different ways of doing what you're doing, but not who you are.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also that it's a great thing to start with the why, because sometimes in our daily life we lose sight of the why. So it's a great thing to remind yourself, to give yourself some energy, to give yourself some motivation.
Yeah, and I to give a concrete tool, which I really love, even though I'm not crafty, is just to do a vision board. You know, and a vision board, just a collection of pictures in my case, because I'm not into craft and stuff and I cannot make pretty things. I'm not Pinterest, but I try to at least put, I'd like to put some images of things that really just inspire me in general. And when I look at it in the morning and stuff, I don't feel like, oh my God, this is my dream. I'm like, yes, I'm going to do this, which is going to bring me closer to, I don't know, travel the world or leave here or leave that. And then at the end of the day, when I'm coming back, I can just mentally check, like, you know, I did you. I'm coming for you.
Thank you very much, Asta, for all of us inside. Only I'm convinced that it will inspire some people.
I hope so. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to express myself and get the word out there. And if it can just inspire someone to get up and just do it, then I'd be more than just happy and feel fulfilled.
Hey guys, thank you very much for listening. Please follow Sebenini Tama, an interactive thought-provoking wellness platform, on the blog, on Facebook, and on Instagram. You can find us at Sebenini Tama, spelled SebeniNitama. I know it's a bit difficult to spell, but it's definitely worth it. Thank you very much.